Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
All right, you're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Oh boy, this has been a wild 72 hours, and I feel like I'm watching one of those nature shows when, you know, you follow the lemmings, and they show the lemmings one after the other just jumping off the big boulders into the icy water. It's like they're not even thinking. They're just following the one in front. Like, okay, I'll jump off. Splash, 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 splash. One after, and you wonder, are they ever going to make it back to the rock? But I guess they, some of them might. But the Democrats, they started down this road of kind of voting for impeachment. And you don't know if Pelosi is going to ultimately pull the brakes on articles of impeachment and really making this official. But you know what I say after watching these people? Let's bring it on. Let's go. Let's go. Put on the pads. Let's go. Let's suit up. Let's get ready. Because I want all you swing Democrats to go back to your districts and make the case to impeach this president over a phone call with the Ukrainian president, where it's about congratulating his parliamentary wins, talking about the support we've given you. The European Union's not given as much support as we are. By the way, yeah, do me a favor. Look into this corruption. This stuff, all this stuff with CrowdStrike and going on in Ukraine, and, you know, talk to the attorney. This is how Trump talks, by the way. It's a very freewheeling conversation. It's always going in many different directions at one time. That's the way he talks. If I could have a dime for, by the way, the many number of times Trump in regular conversation says, do me a favor. Do me a favor. This is the way he talks. The idea that that would be impeachable is just an embarrassing assertion by anyone with any, even a small shred of experience in government. Certainly no lawyer worth anything would argue that that's an impeachable offense. So the Democrats want to do this after it was Biden who joked on camera about withholding funds if they don't do something.
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
This is Joe Biden not being criticized by the elites for joking about dangling that little treat of foreign aid for the, you know, return favor of firing a prosecutor. Now, there are people say that the prosecutor was corrupt for other reasons. Maybe Biden didn't know about his son getting money from this company that was being investigated by the prosecutor. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know the appearance of impropriety. At the very least, this rose to an actual conflict of interest for Biden to be in charge of this policy. And no one's batting an eye on that. No, there's no curiosity at all about that. Where's Hunter Biden? Why is no one staked out at his house? Joining us now is Peter Schweizer. Of course, his book, Secret Empires, How the American Political Class Hides Corruption, Enriches Family and Friends. Of course, he's written all about this. He knows all about this. He joins us now. Peter, man, this has been quite a 72 hours in Washington. The Democrats edging further toward perhaps drafting articles of impeachment, maybe even voting on a final impeachment measure, and yet no curiosity at all or concern at all about Biden, the run-up to 2016. And as far as I can tell, Hunter Biden is in hiding.
Yeah, it's great to be on with you, Laura. That's exactly right. I mean, this is the stunning thing about how myopic things are in Washington, D.C. You had a sitting vice president, Joe Biden, who was Obama point person, explicitly stated the point person on policy towards two countries, Ukraine and China. And in both cases, while he's point person, his son cashes in. He cashes in with Ukraine to the tune of $83,000 a month. We know that because we have the financial records involving a court case that involved his business partner, Hunter Biden, getting $83,000 a month from the Ukrainians. And by the way, he had no background in Ukraine, no background in energy policy. So he's cashing in there. Halfway around the world, he's point person towards China. He actually flies with his father. Hunter Biden flies with his father on Air Force Two in December of 2013. 10 days after they return from that trip, Hunter Biden's small boutique firm gets a $1 billion, that's with a B, a private equity deal, later expanded to $1.5 billion. This for a firm headed by a man who has no background in China or in private equity. But there's no curiosity. There's no interest in that. There's no even desire to press Joe Biden to explain how is this allowed to go on. Your son had no skill set in these areas. So what precisely was he being paid all this money for?
I mean, it's that we all know. Bill O'Reilly yesterday on the podcast is like, we all know Biden was, Hunter was getting this board seat because dad was vice president.
Right.
It's as simple as that. There's no other. As a reason, and they and the guy heading that brief, my brother's like, this will help me out down the road if I get in any problems with the government. Then they're not gonna do anything to me. Hunter's on my board. What are you going to do to me? I mean, it was like an insurance policy for Burisma.
Yeah, and they basically had the Biden family on a retainer. And Laura, if you look at the timing, remember February of 2014, Yanukovych, the pro-Russian leader of Ukraine, falls. The Russians move into Crimea. That's in 2014. Joe Biden is announced as the point person on policy within 6 weeks. Hunter Biden joins the board of Burisma, which is headed by a guy named Zlochevsky, who was the energy minister in the Yanukovych government, the pro-Russian government. So this is who they're dealing with. So the timing is laid out crystal clear, and Joe Biden wants us to believe that he never has talked to his son about any of his business dealings. Of course, Hunter actually refuted that in an interview he did in July in The New Yorker, where he said, yeah, he talked to his dad about Burisma, and his dad said, well, I just hope you know what you're doing. So, you know, their story has continued to change. And again, the mainstream media is not interested in this underlying story.
No, and Biden was, I wouldn't say pressed on this, but he's chosen to go to, like, late-night television to get those real hard-hitting interviews, because they do hard-hitting interviews of liberals. Let's listen, Jimmy Kimmel.
You know, when you step back from it, this is not about me and my family. There's not one single solitary legitimate journalist in the world who's given any credibility to this. They've debunked all of what he's had to say for the past, since Giuliani started this a while ago.
Well, is that the case? Is that true? I don't know what Kimmel said in response. Was there any follow-up? No, apparently no follow-up.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, he has been asked about this. I give him credit. The New York Times, a reporter there, has pressed him on this. ABC News pressed him on this. And they talked explicitly about the fact that this presented a conflict of interest, that this could very much be seen as corruption. So, you know, the approach that Biden is taking is to attack the messenger. When the book came out last year, they attacked me. Now they're attacking Rudy Giuliani. What they don't want to do is talk about the facts. They don't want to talk about the flow of money. They don't want to talk about the corporate records. They don't want to talk about the timing of these deals. All they want to do is talk about something else. And I think what's going to get interesting, Laura, is you're starting to see rumblings of this. Other people in the Democratic primary, I think like Bernie Sanders and maybe Elizabeth Warren, are smelling blood, and I think it's very possible they're going to start raising these issues, as they should. Democratic voters need to know about this as they're deciding who their standard bearer is going to be.
Well, and what's kind of interesting as well is that Joe Biden, in this interview, went on to talk about how this should be investigated, meaning if they investigate Trump for this, the other thing, at least the Republicans, will have to double up and investigate what Joe Biden and Hunter Biden were up to in 2016. Let's listen.
And it's time for the Congress to fully investigate the conduct of this president. The president should stop stonewalling this investigation and all the other investigations into his alleged wrongdoing. Using its full constitutional authority, Congress, in my view, should demand the information it has a legal right to receive. If the Congress does not, if the president does not comply with such a request from the Congress, he continues to obstruct Congress and flout the law, Donald Trump will leave Congress, in my view, no choice but to initiate impeachment.
Yeah, I mean, look, the phone conversation that President Trump had with the Ukrainian President Zelensky is a totally legitimate inquiry. And I think this is what people are so frustrated about. I mean, if you remember when Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, her defenders and the Democrats were saying, well, there's no point in investigating her. She's not running for office. Now they're saying, well, you can't investigate Joe Biden because he is running for office. The question is, when are you allowed to investigate?
That's a great point.
You know, when are you allowed to investigate, Laura, high-ranking government officials for corruption? Because, look, this is a pattern, and there are Republicans that have done it as well. I've written about it. They go to these countries like Ukraine where there's a lot of corruption, and they cash in. They say, I've got a powerful dad or I've got a powerful mom. I work for this powerful political figure. They go and cash in. And they need to be held into account. And what I see in the conversation that he had with the Ukrainian president was he said, I want you to work with my attorney general. There is nothing inappropriate whatsoever in saying, let's just get to the bottom of this and figure out what happened. And why are the Bidens so, you know, concerned about that? I mean, if Hunter was the most remarkable energy consultant known to man and was earning his keep, why would they be afraid about an investigation here? It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and again, why, other than that one interview he did with The New Yorker, which was a disaster for him, where is he? Why is he not going on any friendly media outlets? He can hang out with Morning Joe and explain it all and make it all clear. You know, like, he's not making himself available at all for any conversation. I don't even know where he lives. We can't even find him.
Yeah.
He's in hiding.
And we're not supposed to, it's not legitimate to look at any of the Biden family dealings. We certainly can and should look at the Trump family dealings. You know, the media is interested in that. And by the way, I think that's completely legitimate. I mean, there ought to be inquiries, but it needs to be consistent. It needs to be on both sides. And again, the lack of curiosity by some reporters, particularly certain publications. I mean, the Times has been much better. The Washington Post has been basically DOA as it comes to Biden's financial entanglements and the activities of his son, particularly in China. Imagine if it was Don Jr. who flew on Air Force One with his dad and landed a billion-dollar deal with the Chinese government in an area that he had no expertise. I'm willing to make a pretty good bet that the Washington Post would make that a front page story.
No, it's not even close. And one of the few folks on the other cables who even raise the question of impropriety or the appearance of a conflict for Biden in 2016 was Ian Bremmer on CNN.
Biden does have a problem here, by the way. I mean, I have to say, $50,000 a month for Hunter Biden, clearly to be selling influence, because otherwise no one would ever pay him that kind of money for a company that, frankly, was pretty corrupt and has been before and has been since under
investigations. And is that Joe Biden's fault or problem?
No, but it's hard to imagine Joe Biden wasn't aware of it. And I think that I expect that President Obama, if he had known about the reality of this situation, would have probably told Biden, get rid of this. Like, we shouldn't have your son working in this situation. That would have cost him something.
Well, it's rare to find that. But you see, even that small little snippet got pushback from Allison Camerota. Oh, is that Joe Biden's fault? I mean, he can't even let his point stand. Not even for a millisecond you can't allow it. But let's move on, though, Peter, because this could go into a very interesting stage. Let's say the Democrats decide to go all in. Nancy's going to throw caution to the wind, despite what the polls say about impeachment, despite what it could do to our economy, all of that. And they vote to impeach the president on some bogus article regarding corruption or quid pro quo, which obviously wasn't there. It's not even close. Then it goes to the Senate. Now, the Senate, people don't realize this. The way impeachment goes, and I know this because of all my coverage of the Clinton impeachment saga, the case has to be presented all anew in the Senate. It's not like they just vote on it in the Senate. The Jim Sensenbrenner, who has done more impeachment work than anyone, Congressman Sensenbrenner, who's retiring, you have to put the case on in the Senate so the Senate can do its own investigation into this and should, if indeed it goes to that point.
Yeah, exactly right. And you know, the question comes down to what the Democrats are going to argue is that basically he was asking the Ukrainians to dig up dirt on Joe Biden and that this was not a legitimate inquiry. So then the question becomes, you're going to have to look at what actually were the Biden's dealings in Ukraine. So, you know, it's interesting to me. I mean, I obviously don't know what's going on in Joe Biden's head, but I've got to believe that, you know, he wants to talk about that there needs to be an impeachment inquiry and this needs to be looked at. But I cannot imagine for his political future and reputation that he actually wants to have, you know, the nation watching hearings discussing, in part, his family's commercial dealings overseas. Because I am very confident, based on what we know and some of the additional reporting that John Solomon has done, that there is a lot of information to be garnered as to exactly what Hunter Biden was doing and the kinds of conversations that were being held. Remember, this president, President Trump, has the authority to declassify records of previous conversations. The sort of transcript or notes of his conversation with Zelensky, conversations that Joe Biden had with Ukrainian officials, there are records of those conversations. Does Joe Biden really want those to be aired in some way for people to be, you know, given the backstory about all of this? So I think it's going to get very messy. I think the reason that you're seeing Nancy Pelosi do this is she's splitting the difference. She wants to say that there's an inquiry so she can appease the progressives. But I don't think she actually wants to have the impeachment, you know, officially proceed full bore because it's going to, I think, spell some, you know, serious trouble for her political party and perhaps their hold on the House.
Yeah. How about the fact that we have we have dueling fundraising on this whole deal? Trump's raised like $5 million in 24 hours. I mean, they have just so much money in the campaign, the Trump campaign. I want to watch who's getting those consulting fees. And
I
kind of follow the money, like who's getting paid what to do what. That's my antenna always go up when I say all that money coming in. But they're making a lot of money. The whistleblower lawyer for the whistleblower is someone who has worked in many Democrat causes. Now, that lawyer is raising money for the, quote, defense of the whistleblower. Now, why does the whistleblower need to be defended? I find that odd. I mean, why they couldn't, like, represent her pro bono? All it is you know, one page, basically, of nothing. I mean, it's just the whole whistleblower complaint involves the transcript of the call that she didn't hear or he didn't hear. I'm betting it's a woman that he didn't or she didn't hear.
Well, it's funny, Laura. You know, you remember back in the days in the 70s, you know, the 60s, the Pentagon Papers, and you had these leaks and these whistleblowers, and sort of the image portrayed in the movies was this sort of strong, independent person who's kind of standing alone. Well, the whistleblower today, they have a fundraising team. They have lawyers, they have media advisors. They've got this whole apparatus behind them, which I think speaks to the fact that, you know, the art of whistleblowing is changing. And what it means is, particularly I think in the Trump era, it's become much more political. You've got so many people in Washington, not just liberal Democrats, by the way, who do not like what Trump represents. They don't like the way that he operates. This is, you know, what I call the permanent political class. It's Republicans and Democrats. They like the way that Washington works. It's finely tuned. It makes them money. They have access. They get to the right parties. And Trump has come in and kind of disrupted that. And they don't like it. And so I think that there's a whole interesting question about, you know, how these whistleblowers are coming forward, who's backing them, and who's making money off of these whistleblowers.
That's a great point. And I think all of that should be transparent.
Like absolutely.
I've said this. This like GoFundMe stuff for people who end up throwing the whole country into chaos. Like, where does that money go? I the fact that none of that is traced.
But it's in this era. You're right. People can raise money. You know, we've seen that with some of the people. You know, that were FBI officials who pretty clearly seem to have broken the law, who have gone out and raised money. And again, there's no accountability of where that money's going. Is it really going to their lawyers? Is it going towards something else? We just don't know. And I think that's an interesting question. And I think something that should be addressed about transparency and the requirements of, if you're going to go out and represent yourself as a victim, you ought to be able to disclose what the money you raise is actually going for. There needs to be accountability. They're demanding it of other people. We ought to demand it of them.
That's a great point, Peter Schweizer. One other thing I want to ask you about, Peter, is Biden's involvement with China. We hear a lot about it. I think a lot of my listeners don't quite understand it, but I do want to, just before we get into it, flashback to July 2016 when Biden said this about China.
I've spent a lot of time with President Xi. Even he acknowledges that the growth and progress in China has been a direct relationship of the stability that has been encouraged by U.S. presence. We're not trying to contain China. We're not trying to slow down Chinese growth. The growth of China is overwhelmingly in our interest.
I mean, he should never win the presidency just for that comment alone. I mean, forget Hunter Biden, just that comment. But why is that so important with your what you found in your reporting?
Great question, Laura. It's important because Joe Biden, through most of his career, elected to the Senate in 1972, has been pretty hawkish about China. But in the Obama years, he became a lot more of a dove. That comment that you just aired is a perfect example of that. What's interesting is that has coincided. That has coincided during the Obama years with his son doing major business deals in Beijing. There's one that I think we mentioned earlier. He flew with his father on Air Force Two, came back with a $1 billion private equity deal, later expanded to $1.5 billion. They created this company funded by the Chinese government called Bohai Harvest. But there was a second deal. Hunter Biden was co-founder of this company called Rosemont Realty, which was funded in part by the John Kerry, Teresa Hines Trust, put capital into this. A Chinese entity called Gemini in 2015 committed $3 billion. They bought part of the company, 75% of it, and they committed to putting in $3 billion in capital to buy real estate assets in the United States. And what's interesting about that is the Chinese company that did it, Gemini, is connected to a Chinese firm called Costco, which is very close to the Chinese military. So you have multiple deals that Hunter Biden is doing with the Chinese government or Chinese entities in the latter part of the Obama administration, while his father is point person to towards China. And that is not a coincidence. The Chinese have a well-established strategy in Australia, New Zealand, and elsewhere, basically trying to buy off the political class by doing lucrative deals with their family members.
Yeah, well, look at they've tried to do this in Italy. They're doing it all throughout Africa.
Yeah.
And it is now, I mean, one of the great things about Trump is that he's moved public opinion so far against China. I mean, that will go down as one of his great, you know, I think great legacies. That He's had a brilliant approach to trade with China, eyes wide open approach to China, much more pragmatic and realistic than any prior president. And he's called China out right at the UN. He looked right at China. He said, you're basically not going to, would like to get along with you, would like to have a better trade relationship with you, but you're not going to get away with this anymore. I mean, that was just awesome. That was fantastic.
Yes. Recognizing China for what it is and what China has said it is, which is a threat and a rival to the United States. Their stated goal is by 2030 to supplant the U.S. Navy as the supreme naval power in the world. They're using their economic muscle around the world, One Belt, One Road, other initiatives to supplant the United States. So the notion that sort of Joe Biden exhibited, that said, oh, the growth in China is good, we want them thriving, is basically saying you're running in a foot race with somebody, and you want to give, an energy bar to the guy that's running against you. Because, no, it's good. It's good that he's stronger, later in the race than he is now. It's an absurd statement, and it's an example of the naivete, or worse, not only exhibited by Joe Biden, but also, frankly, some Republicans in Capitol Hill as well, because there's a lot of money to be made in China.
Yeah, well, again, selling out your country is, could be very lucrative. And
yes.
China would like nothing more than Joe Biden to win the presidency. That would be, then it's just back to business as usual. And it'd be phenomenal for China. It'd be the best news ever. Peter Schweizer, you've done such incredible work. Keep it up. Do not ever back down. I know you won't, but we're just so glad you're on our side of finding out the truth, not even a partisan thing, just the truth about what happened here. And we just appreciate your work, Peter Schweizer, here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. And by the way, if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. If you're in a business, small, medium-sized business, obviously a large business, you can have a hodgepodge of business systems trying to manage your product, your marketing, your payroll. Well, you need one system for accounting, another for sales, inventory. It's just a big, inefficient mess, and you know what I'm talking about. Well, guess what? NetSuite by Oracle. It's a business management software program that handles every aspect of your business in a really easy-to-use cloud platform. And it gives you the visibility and control that you need in order to grow your business. And with NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches. You manage sales, finance, accounting, orders, HR, all of it instantly, right from your desktop or your phone even. This is incredible. This is where technology is just amazing. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profit, at netsuite.com/Ingraham. It's the number one cloud business system in the world. So go to netsuite.com/Ingraham. Go to netsuite.com/Ingraham. And remember, download your free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits, at netsuite.com/Ingraham. I want to remind everybody that you take your home and sometimes your security of your home for granted. You close the door and you think everything's fine. But you've got to do everything in your power to protect your family, because your home is where your heart is, where your possessions, sometimes your valuable possessions are. And of course, the most valuable is your family. Well, ADT can provide everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks, lights, all controlled from the ADT app on your phone, the sound of your voice. It's peace of mind and it's priceless. I want you to learn more. Get a custom-designed ADT home security system connected to first responders installed in your home today. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com.
This is the essence of what the president communicates. We've been very good to your country, very good. No other country has done as much as we have. But you know what? I don't see much reciprocity here. I hear what you want. I have a favor I want from you, though. And I'm going to say this only 7 times, so you better listen good. I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent, understand lots of it, on this and on that. I'm going to put you in touch with people, not just any people. I'm going to put you in touch with Attorney General of the United States, my Attorney General, Bill Barr. He's got the whole weight of the American law enforcement behind him. And I'm going to put you in touch with Rudy. You're going to love him, trust me. You know what I'm asking, and so I'm only going to say this a few more times, in a few more ways. And by the way, don't call me again. I'll call you when you've done what I asked.
You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast, and that was, of course, Adam Schiff putting the worst possible spin in his verbal editing of what the president said. And that, in that little dramatic reading, didn't at all indicate why any of this would rise to the level of being an impeachable offense. The president wanting to root out corruption in Ukraine so this never happens to another president again. I should hope he does that. And Trump, if I had a dime for the amount of times I said, a number of times Trump says, do me a favor. He says that all the time in conversations. It's just what he says. And then the most hilarious thing about this is the Office of Legal Counsel opinion that the president, in talking to foreign leaders, cannot be considered someone who's trying to, you know, do a quid pro quo or shake someone down. It's just, that's not how it works. He has the sole authority to deal with and engage with foreign leaders. Joining us now, Pat Buchanan, one of our absolute favorites, columnist, commentator, worked for Pat. How many presidents? Four, five, six?
Three.
It seems like, well, I'd like to take Pat Buchanan back just a few years and have Pat Buchanan in the hopper here for the next maybe election after this election. My friends and I talk about that a lot. Yeah, Buchanan out there. We still talk about it. Yeah, Pat, what do you think about all this? I mean, you got Schiff out there.
What you just did, whatever I just heard, was Adam Schiff's rendition of what the Trump said in that conversation with the president of Ukraine. And the fact that he hyped it all up and exaggerated and supplanted new words for old. And what it tells you is that it's not there. As the Wall Street Journal said, this is thin gruel. You can't hang an impeachment on this. Trump is congratulating him, and Trump is saying, you know, we've been very good to you, better than the other folks, and I've got a favor to ask. And the idea that this is an impeachable offense and you would remove the President of the United States for asking him to help out in terms of revealing what was the investigation uncovered over in Ukraine, I just don't think it does it.
No, and I think that, again, we see the utter desperation on the part of the Democrats who, for all their bluster, I really don't think they're all that confident in their chances of winning next year. I think they see their candidates are flawed. Biden's obviously very shaky. Now he has this Ukraine thing that clearly is not going to go away. But aside from that, he's just half the time he doesn't know where he is. God bless him.
About Biden, I think, I don't want to go too far out on a limb. I think he's just about finished, to be honest, in this sense. He's fallen behind in Iowa to Warren, in New Hampshire to Warren, in California to Warren. Nationally, in two polls, he's fallen behind Warren. And look what's ahead of him. If the Democrats pursue, as Nancy Pelosi has opened the door to, pursue the alleged impeachment of Donald Trump, what is the central issue that's going to be discussed about what Trump was saying on the tape? It's going to be what Joe and Hunter Biden did in Ukraine. Is there any way a discussion of that for 4 months before Iowa can be helpful to Biden, who is already slipping? And as you mentioned, he's got the problem already of the gaffes and the inability really to speak clearly, coherently, and cogently, which has been real trouble for him. So he's been dropping. I don't know how he turns this around. And it's looking more and more to me like Elizabeth Warren. We see where Kamala Harris is putting all her eggs in the Iowa basket. Cory Booker is going to either get the money and the $2 million he needs in 10 days, or he's going to drop out. Bernie Sanders had his great moment in 2016, but he seems to be fading in the left-wing lane to Warren. It looks to me like Biden, again, is the first casualty of what Nancy Pelosi has done.
And then I think they think Warren, for all her, you know, kind of trying to do the working class left-wing populism thing, I think they're worried because the stock market, I don't see a recession coming. It looks like they've made some progress on this on trade. I mean, Lighthizer, who's just an absolute genius, Bob Lighthizer, he just negotiated. He just got Japan to do all this stuff on agriculture, which kind of blunts what China can do. But he just got all these concessions yesterday from Japan. And nobody's talking about it, but I follow this religiously. So he got all these concessions, and yet the market's reacting to a possibility of impeachment, so the market's down today. I think Trump can tag the Democrats. You're cratering. You're trying to hurt our economy with this impeachment. We were the envy of the world with our economy until you came along with this impeachment nonsense. This is on your shoulders. I think he's going to do that. I think that's a terrible gamble for the Democrats.
I think it's horrible. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has gambled her house. She has gambled her fate and her own future on this impeachment thing. She has clearly jeopardized any compromises or any bipartisan work on, you know, prescription drugs or gun control or the infrastructure. She's bet everything now by doing this, has bet everything on impeachment. And there's no guarantee that she's going to have 218 votes to impeach if once the House, which hasn't even voted yet to begin in a clear impeachment inquiry, she's going to have to get 218 votes in the House to even to impeach. And I don't know whether they got the time or the energy or the desire to do that. This is at its hottest right now, this Ukraine thing. And as this begins to fade, how do they keep it all alive to get an impeachment vote? And if they get that, what happens to it right over in the Senate? So I think the Democrats have virtually put every chip into the middle of the table and said, okay, let's deal one round of cards.
We're going back to this idea that a president, the framers thought a president should be removed from office, a democratically elected president removed from office for a phone call where he says, do me, this is the most ridiculous thing in the hyperbolic commentary from people now saying, Chris Matthews says he doesn't trust the transcript. All oh no, it's not really a transcript. You know, there's probably more.
Well, the reason he's doing the same thing we just heard with that hyper rendition by Schiff. What Chris is saying by that, he's revealing the fact is, look, the transcript didn't do it. It didn't deliver the smoking gun we were told was there. We got to get the original tape. We got to get more. We got to get more from the whistleblower. What they're saying, in effect, is, look, we haven't drawn to the inside straight yet, fellas. We need some more cards. So I think this is sort of an indication that very close to the origination of this situation, that they really don't have it yet, and they're going to have to do more and more and more. And all the while, all the country's going to be talking about is impeachment, and I don't think that's a winner for the Democrats in Congress.
No, and the only person who's really putting forward policy ideas is the new kind of it girl of the left, which is, I'm talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, look, I don't agree with her on anything, but I kind of admire her moxie. This is her moment.
29 years old. She's very precocious, and look, it was a very dramatic thing, knocking off Joe Crowley up there in Queens, mm-hmm. one of the old sort of Catholic Irish Catholic Democrats, you know. But and she does. She's got a lot of pizzazz. But I will say this: it seems to me there's no question about it when you see where Warren is gone and where the squad is gone and where the others are gone, that the fire and energy in the Democratic Party is on the left, the socialist left. And you see it in the debates when they get up there and someone says, you know, we want to decriminalize people walking into the United States of America. And everybody says, yay. Well, we're going to do away with private health insurance. And people all say, yay. I mean, they're being driven by the left wing of the Democratic Party mm-hmm. further and further left. And by the time they get to next summer, mm-hmm. I think they're going to find out they're too far out there and they got to get back.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be hard for them, too, because now Ocasio-Cortez and the squad are emboldened. And they say, look, I have a massive Twitter following. I can mobilize a lot of people. She has obviously very sophisticated backers. She released a video with an old time microphone, and look, she's very attractive. Someone on Twitter said, "Would anyone pay attention to her if she wasn't, you know, an attractive, you know, kind of charismatic?" She comes across as a very fun person. I don't have an answer to that, but that issue's been raised.
There's no question about it, her persona.
So Pat, on this but on this issue of the conspiracy theorists out there who believe that Trump he's corrupt, he has to be removed, what will they do if he's reelected? What will happen to the country then?
Well, I think what will happen is certainly in the Democratic Party, Pelosi and the others will, if they attempt to impeach the president and then fail and then he's reelected, they will be totally discredited, all the folks that did that. But I do think in those cases, what usually happens is the militants inside the party, the Goldwaterites, the McGovernites, whatever, after you've taken a real bad defeat, they tend to rise to power and try to take it over at the local level. We haven't been tough enough, aggressive enough, and you all led us, and you led us down this road to defeat. And, you know, as Ed Dirksen famously said of Dewey, and we're not going to follow you again. So I think the future of the Democratic Party is very much on the left. I don't see the moderates. I mean, many of them are people that conservatives and Republicans can get along with and have always worked with on the Hill, sort of the Rostenkowski wing, if you want. But I think those folks are really an endangered species in the Democratic Party, just as the Rockefeller Republicans were in the Republican Party after Goldwater took control. And frankly, my old boss Richard Nixon saw the sea change there and moved away from Rockefeller, whom he had moved toward in 1960, toward the Goldwater wing of the party to bring them in until he got the nomination, got elected, and those were the elements of his new majority.
Will there be a period, though, of, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself, I have no idea what's going to happen in the election, but if Trump wins, will there be a period on the left of, okay, we're exhausted by this, he's the president for the next 4 years, we've got to regroup and figure out a way to beat the next person? Or will they continue to, you know, hit him with investigations, do you think? I think there might be a period of calming because they're going to get ready for the next fight, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think if Donald Trump runs for re-election, he's either impeached and is not convicted, or he's exonerated, or he's also moves ahead and is re-elected. I think that is a tremendous defeat and a discrediting of the Democratic Party. Certainly its entire leadership element will have no justification for continuance. And I think it will trigger, my own view is those things tend to trigger a reaction among the militants in the party to rise up and throw out the old guard. And I don't know what the old guard would have to say for itself. They haven't cooperated with him, and they have unsuccessfully opposed him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly should be the end of the, you know, the.
Well, it'll be Justin. The Schumer generation will be gone. Schumer, Pelosi generation, and of course Biden will be. As I say, I think poor Joe is the first casualty of this, of Pelosi's unleashing the dogs of impeachment. Because, I mean, Joe Biden and his son Hunter, I mean, that's the central issue of discussion, whether it's legitimate for the president of the United States to ask the president of Ukraine to, look, can you check in and see what appears to us to be a matter of serious corruption here and let us know what it's all about. I mean, what they're saying also, you'll notice, Lars, they're saying that Trump wanted to manufacture dirt, that Trump wanted to cook up dirt.
No, he didn't.
What did Trump ask for? He just asked for what went down over there.
Right. I don't think he, when I saw the call, the transcript, I thought to myself, gosh, I'm really glad we have him in there, because unlike other presidents, he says things like, you know, we're giving you a lot of money and it would be nice if the Europeans ponied up because it's really in their interest to support you. I mean, who else talks like that? He is sick of America getting fleeced. He's always asking questions of the Pentagon and others. How much is this costing us? How much a day per day does it cost us to be in South Korea? I mean, he asks those questions because I've heard him ask questions and I've heard him talk about this.
Well,
and
another thing, one of the problems he has is, look, he's new. I mean, some of us have spent our whole lives in politics and issues, are well aware where all these landmines are. He comes in and he asks, as you point out, the raw question. Look, we've been in South Korea now for 60 or 50 years. We fought a war there. The Cold War's over. The Russian Soviet Union's all broken up. Communism is dead here. Why should Americans be the first to die in a second Korean War? And why should we spend more on defense in Asia than the Asians are spending themselves when we're defending them? And the Cold War's over. And in other words, he's taken a fresh look at what everybody sort of just takes for granted. And so doing, I'm sure he steps on various landmines and things. But there's a freshness to him and a willingness to raise these issues and to ask these questions, which maybe some of them are, the answers are the correct ones already, and maybe they're not. But in that sense, he's really new and fresh, and it's one of the reasons the American people, that 40% stay solidly with him. He's the first one that's done this in their lifetime.
I think you're, of course, 100% right. And he really stuck his neck out to both run for the presidency and take on the swamp. And when Schumer said the deep state intel community, whatever, will always find a way to get you. Look, boy, has there been anything said more prescient than that?
Well,
I mean, they're after him from the moment he announced that he was running for the presidency. They were after him.
And, you know, we're a polarized country. I'm sure to Schiff and these fellas, and they, I don't know whether they believe it or not, that what we have here is a heroic whistleblower. But one man's heroic whistleblower is another man's, you know, bureaucrat and apparatchik who's part of the deep state that has probably been trying desperately to damage and destroy the president of the United States since before he took the oath of office.
I just don't understand why when someone gets called a whistleblower, then you can never ask him a question, or you never can know the name.
Well,
they get to raise tons of money.
Trump didn't call him a whistleblower.
Yeah, he's like, we don't know what it is. Yeah,
I understand that. It is human, and everybody understands. You know, I mean, I don't know who this person is, a male or female, or whether they're dedicated, or you hear that possibly they're very supportive above the left or something. But most people will say that, you know,
they have a political bias.
Is that guy ratting us out? Is this guy trying to damage us? Is he really an honest whistleblower? I mean, people ask these questions among each other if they're not asked on national TV.
I'm telling you, I think Trump is going to get bigger approval numbers. His numbers are already going up. I think his numbers are going to keep going up because I don't think anyone wants this. Most people, like whatever, 32% of Americans want this. I think most people don't want this. They see it's going to hurt the economy. And then you're going to really, see the you know what hit the fan here.
I think you're right. If the economy and the markets start going down,
did today?
All we hear from the Democrats is we're going to impeach him, we're going to do this or that, and to Trump, and we're going to get rid of him. And I think it's they're at the maximum. They've got all their media behind them, all outraged and indignant and demanding impeachment, et cetera. But they're going to have to keep repeating this again and again and again right through the end of the year. And I just think the countries are going to say, as it came to say about that Russia thing, get it over with. I mean, when you saw Lewandowski up there and Nadler's committee, Nadler's committee was quite clear they were very tired. They're repeating the old stuff. We've been there. We saw the Russia thing. We saw the Mueller thing. Move on. And, you know, in the last debate, there was no discussion at all, I believe, of the impeachment. But now Pelosi has made this the issue of the issue of 2020.
Well, and we'll see what we'll see if people want to vote for peace and prosperity, even with a guy who's a little rough around the edges, or they want to vote for, you know, what will be tantamount to socialism, resistance politics, retribution politics. I mean, I just think they have to run the campaign as clearly as that.
I look at the Democrats with their lineup and the way it is now shaken down in the last, say, 2 weeks, where Biden clearly has suddenly the air is out of the balloon here, and where Warren is ascendant and Bernie's descending, and Kamala Harris looks like, you know, she and Cory Booker are sort of on their last legs, unless they're faking it, that this is looking like Senator Warren could be the nominee. And I mean, is she really going to carry Texas and North Carolina and places like that, given her agenda, given her history? So I think the Democrats there's got to be a quiet alarm over there.
No, I agree. Pat Buchanan, it's always so great to talk to you, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us today. There's no one I respect more. His point of view, his history in politics and journalism, just there's no one else out there like Pat Buchanan, and I just adore him. So, all right, we will be covering every twist and turn in this impeachment saga, bogus charges, all this stuff, what this means for 2020, but more important, what it means for the country, the direction we're going into as we head into this election season. We'll cover it all. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast, America, now and forever. See you next time.